Welcome to KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. The actor, singer Alan Cumming is premiering a new show in Seattle at Benaroya Hall. It's called Legal Immigrant, and I'm going to let him tell you about it because he is our guest coming up. I hope you'll stay tuned. We begin this hour with the news that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is talking very defiantly to Republican allies of President Trump. They have drafted articles of impeachment against him, and Rosenstein says the Justice Department will not be extorted or give in to threats. I asked a senior Washington State Republican about this and other matters. Spokane's Kathy McMorris Rogers is the fourth highest ranking Republican in the U.S. House. She told me she didn't know about these articles of impeachment, hasn't seen them herself, but she understands her party members' frustration with Rod Rosenstein and this Justice Department.
We need to know what the answers are. He needs to be more transparent about what his involvement has been. There's a lot of concerns about people within the FBI that have been acting based upon political persuasion rather than actually upholding the high standards within the FBI. And we need them to be more transparent and work with Congress to make sure that we can get the answers.
Where are you on your support for this president? As you know, Congresswoman, plenty of lifelong Republicans worry that President Trump disregards institutions and the rule of law and truth and decency, and that it's dangerous. Where are you on that?
My mission is to restore trust in representative government and in the rule of law. And I am pleased that we've been able to get the results that we have, where I've been able to work with the administration, work with President Trump on getting results, especially around the economy. We're seeing economic growth. That's good news. And as I have been traveling around Eastern Washington, as I have been on the ground listening, doing some town halls, there's a real optimism around our economy. And that's where I am most proud of the results that we have gotten, a Republican majority in the House and the Senate working with President Trump.
That's fair, Congresswoman. Does that mean you have zero concerns about President Trump regarding his treatment of institutions and the rule of law and his integrity?
Well, I take that all very seriously. And in my role as a representative of the people of Eastern Washington, I believe fundamentally in the rule of law. And there's been times when I have made clear where I differ with President Trump. I've also differed with him on his position on trade and on tariffs most recently, and have spoken out and very concerned about the impact of across-the-board tariffs on Washington State and Washington State's economy.
The House Speaker, Paul Ryan's not running for re-election, and I don't see your name on the list of probables. Why not you for House Speaker?
I am really focused on my district and getting results for Eastern Washington. I've been honored to have the support of my colleagues to serve in leadership. I believe that it is most important that we focus on getting the results within the House, where our priorities for 2018 center around infrastructure and workforce development. And then we also have an election, obviously, and it's a big election for the midterms. And for the Republicans, we need to stay focused on the job at hand and then have the leadership elections after the election.
Your party seems to be concerned about your reelection, Congresswoman. The Paul Ryan's Congressional Leadership Fund has opened a field office in Spokane. I've seen a widely reported poll where you're only up by 6 points. And your opponent, Lisa Brown, says more than half of the voters aren't satisfied with the performance of someone who's been in Congress for 14 years. What do you say? Why aren't you a slam dunk for reelection?
Well, I have been honored to serve the people of Eastern Washington. I never take an election for granted, but I'm out there right now. I'm out here in Eastern Washington reminding people of my record of results. Just in the last 6 months, I've had 8 bipartisan bills that have passed the House, legislation that is focused on the needs and the priorities of the people of Eastern Washington.
This is Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers, a fourth highest ranking Republican in the House. And let's talk about some other issues. The former California Representative Mary Bono, a Republican, she once said that the Democratic Party takes women for granted, but the Republican Party doesn't understand women. What's your take?
I'm a woman within the Republican Party. I believe that women's voices are very important in politics. We had an event last night with a lot of women here in Eastern Washington. I'm encouraging women every day to get involved in politics. I think for a lot of women, they have been turned off by politics, but they need to be involved. All the issues are women's issues. And the issues that we debate every day in Congress have a direct impact on everyone's lives.
You reached out to an online publication for millennial women called Girl Boss. You wrote an article there, and you said that women are naturally suited to be effective legislators. How are men naturally suited to be effective legislators?
Well, when you look at the very qualities that women bring to politics, and that's what I was referring to, it's a lot of the qualities that people are looking for in representatives. Women are seen as being better listeners, trustworthy, willing to work across the aisle to get results. They're not as focused on ego, on title, on position. They're really more focused on making a difference and really being the problem solvers. And I've heard this when I have been recruiting, and I've been on the recruitment team in years past, talking to both men and women. Men and women just approach that decision very differently. And as I talk to women, a lot of times they just never have considered running for office, or they see their plate as being full. They have families or a career, they're involved in the community, and they don't see how this would fit. Whereas the men, when you talk to them, they view it more as the next rung in the ladder and a natural course of for their career. It's just a difference.
Yes, I know we're making generalizations here, but better listeners, less ego involved. Is it fair to say that women in general are better suited, make better lawmakers than men?
Well, from some of the focus groups and the results of that work, it is true that women reflect many of the qualities that people are looking for in legislators right now. But right now, there's not as many women in the House. There's just over 100 out of 435 that serve in the House. And on the Republican side, we have 22 out of 238 that are serving. And that's where I do believe that we need more women.
Speaking of women, Congresswoman, does the energy around the hashtag MeToo movement feel partisan to you?
No. I think that the energy around hashtag MeToo has been both Republican and Democrat women. It's been in a lot of different fields. In Congress, we've had a number of men that have gotten involved in situations that they shouldn't have been. I have worked with Republican and Democrat women to make sure that we are creating an environment on Capitol Hill that is safe and that is welcoming to all women. I think what Capitol Hill needs is there needs to be clarity, especially for the offices and the people that are working within the member offices on Capitol Hill. And that's been my focus.
You are only the fifth woman to have ever given birth while serving in Congress. Did that experience change your attitude on any political matters?
Sure. I was 35 and single when I was elected to Congress. So my life has changed pretty dramatically. And yes, I've gotten married, had three kids. And so my perspective has changed with that. And I'm a working mom now with three young kids and living the challenges of that and the reality of that. It's brought a firsthand experience to the legislation that I work on.
This is Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers, a fourth highest ranking Republican in the House. And let's talk about some other issues. The Columbia Snake River system has more than a dozen endangered salmon runs, but you co-sponsored a bill that reverses a federal judge's order to spill more water from four dams to help salmon reach the ocean. Are these dams not killing wild salmon?
What we're seeing is actually improved fish runs. Historic fish runs are at an all-time high, and dams and fish can coexist. And unfortunately, what the judge ruling does is actually going to harm fish.
Well, the federal judge said that wild salmon are in a precarious state. There are salmon, as we said, more than a dozen endangered salmon runs. So why do you mean when you say the salmon are doing great?
Well, you look historically, there are improved fish runs. What we need to get into place is the biological opinion that would satisfy the Endangered Species Act. And we've been in the courts for 20 years, 20 plus years, to get this biological opinion in place. A biological opinion is a collaborative plan that was negotiated between the federal agencies under the Obama administration, the states, the tribes, the river users, and this is the plan that will help our efforts to recover fish. They've done the research, they've looked at the science, and this is the plan that we need to move forward with so that we can actually further improve fish runs. What the judge has ordered in increased spill is going to add cost. It's an estimated $40 million plus in cost to ratepayers, but also these spills harm fish. So it will not help our fish recovery efforts.
Kathy McMorris Rogers, representing Spokane and a big chunk of Eastern Washington, is the fourth highest ranking Republican in the United States House. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. The actor, singer, writer Alan Cumming has been in show business more than 30 years. He won a Tony for the show Cabaret and played the movie villain Floop in Spy Kids. And there have been TV dramas like The Good Wife in between. Tomorrow night, he's on stage at Seattle's Benaroya Hall premiering his new show, called Legal Immigrant. There will be some Edith Piaf.
If the sky should fall into the sea and the stars fade out around me, for the cause that we have no near, I will see.
Edith Piaf will be interpreted by Alan Cumming. That doesn't really surprise me. I did not expect him to interpret Pink. We're both bobbing our heads now. Yes, there will be Pink, and Alan Cumming will take it back to his roots and sing the Scottish song Caledonia.
So I've been telling old stories, singing songs that make me think about where I came from. That's the reasons why I seem so far away today.
Alan Cumming, welcome to Seattle.
Thank you very much.
This song, Caledonia, is about being called home.
Yes.
What is home to you now? Where is home?
Oh, home is New York City.
Mm-hmm. Is that home now?
Yeah, I've lived there for a long time, years actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also, you know, I feel it's an interesting thing that the show tomorrow is about me becoming an American. But I'm also talking about, that's why I'm singing that Caledonia song. I'm always Scottish first. I don't think you can ever change your... I feel like Scotland's history is sort of mushed up inside the marrow of my bones.
Yeah.
And I've never been able to, in the rehearsals, I've never been able to sing that song without crying.
Why? What are you thinking about?
It's like a sentiment that it just... I don't know. It's not like I'm thinking of something. Let me tell you that I love you and I think about you all the time. That's... Oh, I'm really going again. That is about that. This your constant connection to your past, to your roots. That's what gets me.
Mm. The show's called Legal Immigrant. What's the theme? What's it about?
Well, it's 10 years since I became an American citizen. I am very dismayed about the sort of negative rhetoric and derision that surrounds immigration in this country these days. And so I called it Legal Immigrant as a sort of to raise people's eyebrows because I feel it doesn't really matter what the prefix is before immigrant. The word immigrant now has a negative connotation thanks to this president. And I feel the thing that really got me was that the Citizenship and Immigration Department of the government, their website, they removed the phrase Nation of Immigrants from their description fairly recently, a couple of months ago. And I thought that was just so awful. Like this historical revisionism, rewriting history in front of our eyes, saying that we are not a nation of immigrants. When, you know, hello, Blanche, we are. Unless you're a Native American, you're an immigrant.
Yeah.
But just this idea of that it's happening right in front of our eyes, this negative connotation to not just refugees, not just the other, but anyone who is an immigrant to this country. And I feel like, you know, I'm a new immigrant to this country. I came here because I wanted to be a part of it. And the country has taken a severe change since then. And I just want to try and remind people that this country is so rich and amazing because it has welcomed so many immigrants over the years. And in the show, every song I sing, I'm going to talk about, you know, the immigration status of the composers and the singers. And really, it's a celebration of immigration.
Is every song by an immigrant? An American immigrant?
Well, yeah. There's none by Native Americans. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. I can understand you having these thoughts about President Trump and removing the phrase "Nation of Immigrants" when you're thinking about people who could be threatened by that climate. Refugees, Muslims. We could go on. I'm also curious whether you personally feel any anti-immigrant sentiment
towards
yourself?
Me.
Yeah,
I mean, not in a kind of actual way, but like certainly in terms of living in this country in an environment where being an immigrant is looked on as something not very good, and it's true. Immigrants are not, as with immigration rates have gone deeply down. I'm not saying that we shouldn't, look at our immigration, or everyone in the world's doing that just now. The whole displacement of people that's happened over the last 5 years or so because of the war in Syria has caused amazing political ramifications, I think. The whole Brexit thing in Britain, I think, was totally to do with that. I think Trump's election had a lot to do with it too. He preyed on people's fears and, you know, kind of their the idea of the other being a scary thing. So I just feel I'm living in a time, in a country that I feel is so welcoming and is so rich, and because of its diversity, is trying to pretend it's not diverse. And that's my issue.
Again, this is the actor and singer and writer, Alan Cumming, who's coming to Seattle with a stage show at Ben Arroyo. You're premiering. Why are you premiering the show in Seattle?
Because it was there.
Yeah, could have been anywhere.
Could have been. No.
You were going west and you couldn't go any further.
I was going to fall into the sea. Uh-huh. It was because I was asked to come and do a show here, and I did my last show here like a year and a half ago. And so I was planning to do a new show. I don't know, it just seemed like a good idea. And I think the theatre is so beautiful.
It is.
And I just decided to.
Was this the Sappy Songs show? Was your last
one? Alan Cumming Sing Sappy Songs was my last one, yeah.
I love that. Thank you for singing Sappy Songs. Do you hear that regularly? It's you give a little permission. I've got a real sap side to me, and maybe more people do than I think.
I think yes, I agree. And I think actually what I did with that show is I wanted to sing songs, and like, Legal Immigrant's full of Sappy Songs too, but I felt like when I was doing Sappy Songs, it was the first time I really toured extensively with a show like that, and I kind of wanted to, all the songs I wanted to sing were emotional songs and songs that I could bring something to and, you know, be authentic and be personal and vulnerable when I sing them, like I am in my acting. And so I wanted to sort of warn the audience that I was going to go for it a bit, and also it was kind of funny too. So I feel I've done that with that show, and now I feel like I have license to be sappy. I mean, I think actually sappy means willingness to embrace sentiment and emotion. And so I think everyone can do it. Like, you know, that Caledonia song, somehow it clicks and it connects with you and you don't know why you're moved. It can be even be like a melody without any words, actually. Like when I hear the pipes, for example, it's another sort of thing connected to my roots. I hear the pipes, I'm just weeping.
Well, there is music that is sentimental, that the music can be sophisticated, poetic, mysterious, but you were not above Miley Cyrus.
These chances I'm taking.
This is you.
I know.
I'm facing. Sometimes might knock me down, but no, I'm not breaking. I may not know it, but these are the moments that I'll remember most. I just gotta keep going and gotta stay strong and just keep pushing on.
You gotta stay strong and keep pushing on like Miley Cyrus. I understand you had to come around on choosing that song for that show.
Yes, you know, it's funny because I am myself a victim to sort of self-shaming about certain tastes. And I think it's a big thing in America, that trait. But I was like, oh, it's a Miley Cyrus song, for goodness sakes.
Like the highbrow, lowbrow?
Sort of, and just like poppy nonsense, overproduced poppy nonsense. Yeah. But then I was listening to a lot of music at that time and sort of DJing a bit in my dressing room when I was doing a show on Broadway. And I say this, that songs keep coming back to you for a reason. And actually, I think a lot of pop songs are so overproduced, you can't really hear the lyrics. You just hear this kind of wall of sound. And I think when you strip away some of them, not all of them, but this one in particular, it's a really beautiful song. The message it has is a really tender, positive one. And I think that's why that song kept coming back to me. It's for a reason, because I believe truly in the message of the song. I also did that. In that last show, I sang Avril Lavigne's Complicated.
Yeah.
And that's another one. That's got a really great message in that song, if you just strip it down and do it in a sort of, bare acoustic way.
We were talking about kids, and my 11 and 8-year-old kids listen to a lot of poppy nonsense, but every once in a while,
yeah,
there's a song called Brave by Sarah Bareilles.
Oh, I love that one, yeah.
Makes me cry.
Yes.
So it's funny, the odds.
See, yeah. And she's also, it's interesting, she's now, on the thing on Broadway. She's going to be hosting the Tonys, actually.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And she's got that sort of acting-y, narrative, storytelling thing to her music as well.
Do you get that? Like, would you say that about yourself? You have that?
Oh, I think
when you perform?
When I perform, yeah. I don't have that good a voice. Spoiler alert or full disclosure.
Yeah.
I have a nice voice, but I don't think people are coming to see me to hear the mellifluousness of my tone. They're coming to hear me interpret something. And I think that's what I'm quite a good actor. And I also connect, I'm willing to be vulnerable in a way that I think you need to be to sing a song properly.
You said that you want us to question why we like something.
Or why you don't like something.
Oh, yeah, that yeah. too. Tell me
See,
about
I think
that.
I found, like, this is what, when I was doing, so when I was doing Cabaret, the musical, not the form, on Broadway, I would have, the last time, I had
you were the MC, the Joel Grey part, famous.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And more famous now for Alan Cumming.
It's lots of people's part.
Uh-huh.
No, we don't lay claim.
Okay.
But I made my dressing room into a bar. And now I have a real bar in New York called Club Cumming, and it started in my dressing room, and so I would DJ every night and have a party, and I had a booze sponsor, had a full bar in my dressing room, thanks to Campari America. Uh-huh. But I would notice that I would put certain songs on, sort of more, the tacky poppy sort of dancey things, and I would see people suddenly think, oh, is it okay to dance to this? Is anyone judging me? Am I being, am I lesser now because I'm going to dance to like a Kylie Minogue, thing, or whatever? And I remember saying, what's your problem? Who cares if you want to dance to it, if you want to, just do it. And that was something I realized, there's a lot of that. Even in an environment like that, in my room, when everyone having drinks, nobody's looking at you.
Yeah.
In fact, you can't see, it's so packed, you can hardly look at the floor. So I just found it really interesting that people need permission sometimes to let go. So I've kind of made it my mission. That's in a funny way, that's why I opened my bar. I wanted to encourage people to let go a bit.
Did you never need that permission? And if so, what's your secret?
I don't. I guess I'm Scottish. I think that's a big part of it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we let go quite easily. And when I want to let go, I let go. And I think it's. I was talking earlier about being very focused in my, because I do so many different things. You have to be focused on each thing at each time. And then immediately stop and go into the next thing. And I think I do that with fun as well. I'm as focused on fun as I am on my work.
But if I told you I like John Denver, you'd walk out of here, right?
I have limits. I love John Denver.
You're kidding.
Oh my God, I love him.
I sing in a dad band, a local grunge cover alt-rock band. What I really want to do, if I had the pipes, is a tribute to John Denver.
What would be your go-to John Denver
tune? Oh my God, the lesser-known ones, probably. He sings, tell me a favorite.
I love it. You filled up my senses.
Yes. Oh,
song.
Yeah.
Beautiful song.
Yeah.
What other ones has he done? He is also a fascinating person.
Yeah.
He was a big cokehead, wasn't he?
I think he tried a few things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll have to talk John Denver some other time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And did he die in a plane crash?
He died in a plane crash.
All the greats do.
Yeah. Yeah. This
you know, once I was on a plane, years and years ago, I was on a plane and it got bumpy. And whenever I'm in a bumpy plane and there's another famous person on, I always imagine the headline if we crash.
Yeah.
And I remember one time it was Alec Baldwin, Marla Maples. And this is a long time ago, just after she'd broken up with Trump
okay. And
me. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get third billing if this plane goes down.
Went through your mind.
I think I'd get second now.
Yeah, I think you've moved up.
I think I'd get second. Or maybe equal billing with Alec, who knows?
By the way, we're going to talk about being ready to die in a few minutes. You were kind enough to say, because Barbara Ehrenreich's coming on. She's a fabulous author, best-selling author, and she's written a book called Natural Causes. And actually, aging kind of comes into your show.
Yes, I sing a lot of songs about growing older, and you know, I talk a lot about certain bits of aging that happens on a male anatomy.
The male anatomy. Oh, yes, I look forward to that.
I recently discovered a thing called scrotal aging when I went to my dermatologist.
Well, I wonder if Barbara Ehrenreich, if it came up in her research.
Let's ask her.
Who knows? One more thing before we leave being judgy about low culture. You know you are in, Seattle is a land of socks and sandals. We're not a fashionable place. And I heard an interview clip here where you're also not judgy about fashion.
I like Crocs. I think that, I know it's... Okay, sheep, just laugh because it's Crocs.
No, I mean, no one's judging. No one's judging.
Well, I think they are. I think there's a big thing about it. I think Crocs,
I don't wear Crocs.
Uggs, Jessica Simpson, all these things that people...
I love Jessica Simpson.
I do too.
That's all I wear.
Socks and sandals, though, again, not too far. Could Seattle be too casual for you?
No, I actually have no judgment about what people want to wear. I like some things better than others. I have my own sense of style, but I think
sweatpants outside the house.
Oh, for God's sakes, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, I think all this thing about you can't wear, you know, like I saw a thing earlier today. It said like, you know, you can't wear cargo pants. Why do you need so many pockets? You can't wear flip flops. We don't like your ugly men toes. We don't like you to wear tank tops because you've got armpit hair. Well, we're men. We have hairy toes and armpit hair, and you know, I just think actually it's when someone says they don't like something about like Crocs or like. Socks and thingabobs.
Yeah, so.
I think that says more about the person who's saying it than the person who's wearing it.
Yes. Will you come on every day? No one cares what I think, but I refer them.
We're a good combo.
People to Alan Cumming.
You said you didn't want to do this job.
What job?
This. Sorry, I'm gulping. You said you thought you shouldn't do it because you've got too many kids.
Oh yeah. Well, I was saying I feel I've become fuddy-duddy and maybe someone else should take over. Someone edgier should take
someone
over
more
this
edgy
program.
With this, yeah. This NPR show.
Yeah, what do you think? Maybe.
You have a social media person sitting like a meter away from you. That's edgy.
Yes, she may take my job before this program is over. Yeah, that's Bree Ripley on the tweets. We're live tweeting the show
at
KOW. I understand people like the live tweets.
Oh, the tweets. Yes, yes. We love the tweets. Yes.
Okay, so about aging, before we bring... Barbara Ehrenreich to join our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Why, you know, your show's Legal Immigrant. Again, you're at Benaroya Hall starting tomorrow night.
Yes, tomorrow night.
Premiering the show. One night only tomorrow, Benaroya Hall. The show's called Legal Immigrant. What does that have to do with aging? Why are you talking about aging?
Well, it's about me becoming an American citizen. But it's also about things that have happened to me in my life and certain things. And I some of the songs I sang prompted me to talk about aging. And I'm in my sixth decade.
Yes. We're the same age.
Yes. 25. And so it's something that, you know, you start to notice more. And it's not even like in a negative way. I'm very, like Barbara, I'm very, I think you should embrace your age and your time and live for now and stay in the moment and all that stuff. But you can't help but notice things. And also people bring things to your attention, of course, which is always lovely. A few years ago, I was in Scotland doing a play with the National Theatre of Scotland, and I was playing Dionysus in the Bacchae. And the Bacchae were played by these 10 black girls. And in Scotland, there aren't very many black people. So it was me, and I'm quite famous in Scotland, and 10 black girls out on a Saturday night was a sensation. And we were in a bar, and a beautiful boy walked across the bar towards us all. And all the girls were like, oh, who's he looking at? Of course, he came over to me. And I was like, ah, ha, 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 thanks, girls. And this beautiful boy looked at me and went, it's Alan, isn't it? And I went, yes. And he went, I think you went to drama school with my parents. And I was like, a dagger to my heart.
Yikes.
A dagger. And I had. That was the worst thing.
Are you going to tell that story on stage?
No. Okay. No, I've blown it now on the radio. No, yes. No, that was from another show.
Benaroya Hall tomorrow night, one night, Legal Immigrant. So will you stay and keep talking about aging and feeling great and being humbled at a bar and stuff with Barbara Ehrenreich?
I'd love to.
Okay, quick break, and Alan Cumming and Barbara Ehrenreich in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is The Record on KUOW. Thanks for staying tuned. We have the actor and writer, singer Alan Cumming here. He's doing a show tomorrow night at Benaroya Hall about being an immigrant, also about aging. And as we said, we're the same age, Alan.
Yes.
53. Do you get an annual physical?
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Prostate cancer screening.
Totally.
You do all that.
I'm up on all my,
Yeah,
medical things.
Okay,
that's a great thing. Bizarrely, in this country, although it has a terrible, you know, if you're poor, you don't have much luck in the whole medical situation.
Yeah,
and the pharmaceutical companies control the whole thing, and the insurance companies. But if you are wealthy enough to have a good insurance, you get much more attention than in
more attention than you need.
Absolutely,
I would argue.
Yes,
absolutely, Barbara.
Exactly. This is Barbara Ehrenreich, and I bring this up because in contrast, did not get a prostate cancer screening, I had a physical. Barbara Ehrenreich is the author of the new book Natural Causes, best-selling author. You may know from Nickel and Dimed and many others. And Barbara, you are done with physicals. Right? No checkups, no mammograms. My understanding is that you like living, but you feel old enough to die.
Well, but it's not only that. This is not suicidal.
Yes, yes.
As when you get to be over 50, which you guys really don't know much about, I can tell.
We're over 50.
Yeah, we're new to
very
that.
Very little.
Yes, 53.
But they start wanting you to do all these, you submit to all these screenings and tests. And so each one that came along, I would do a little research on. Internet research, easy research.
Mm-hmm.
So you could quickly find out that major medical groups are not recommending prostate cancer screening anymore.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you've been hoodwinked, Alan.
Gosh, why not? Why don't they recommend prostate cancer screening?
Because if you do statistical studies and compare, you know, with a control group, those who have the screenings and those who don't, you don't find any greater longevity in the groups that don't do it or any greater.
But then, I mean, I hear you, and that's it. But surely, what if you were one of the people who got it and they found it because you got a little test?
We don't know the causal relationship of that.
Let me give an example because, Barbara, you give a great comparison. You compare preventive screenings to counting the number of islands off the coast of Alan Cumming's native Great Britain. Will you explain that analogy?
Well, this is not – I didn't make this up.
Yes.
But I borrowed it that they're always going to find something when they screen and test. And the example given in a book, wonderful book called Overdiagnosed – which gives a scientific and medical opinion on all of these, and not opinion, but shows what the controversy is and weighs in on it. You know, they're not recommending PSA tests anymore.
What's PSA?
Prostate.
Oh, I see.
Prostate.
Specific antigen.
Antigen, yes.
Yeah,
prostate cancer screening, the blood test.
Yeah, so the authors of this book, Overdiagnosed, say that, yeah, you can always find something. And it's a little bit like asking the question, how many islands are there off the coast of what do you call the part that's England and Scotland?
Britain.
Great Britain.
Oh, okay.
United Kingdom.
Sorry if my ignorance of your homeland, which is also my ancestral home. But because there's no counting them. It depends what you count, you know.
Right, right.
What you're going to count.
But how closely you can look.
I mean, I totally hear you, Barbara. And I think, though, don't you think it's the bigger picture is that this country is so dominated by the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical industry that those are the two main reasons that we have all these tests and drugs and things.
No, I mean, I think Kaiser, which is a big HMO here on the West Coast, I was told last night that they're not doing colonoscopies as much. Now they've gotten sensible, like European countries say, first we do a test to see whether there's blood in your stool, in your feces.
Right.
And if there is, we'll do a colonoscopy.
Right.
May I ask you about that, though? I'm glad you brought up colonoscopies. Again, the book is Natural Causes, An Epidemic of Wellness, The Certainty of Dying, and Our Illusion of Control. And the author is Barbara Ehrenreich. So I'm with you. I didn't do a PC, prostate cancer screening. I understand the false positives. But you compare colonoscopies to a sexual assault. You say they sedate you with the date rape drug. You call it kinky. I had a colonoscopy. Oh my God, it was fine. So it made me start to wonder, is it about your reaction to some of this invasiveness?
Well, I couldn't resist mentioning that one of the drugs used for sedation is the same as the so-called date rape drug. But what really repels me personally, though, is the idea that you're going to spend a day fasting and purging yourself before going through this.
Have you done that, Ellen? The fasting and purging and the colonoscopy? Yeah.
Yes, I've done it without
colonoscopy. I don't have the time for that. I'm sorry.
So it's a time thing. Too busy.
Well.
You just feel too
busy.
I'm older than you guys, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm 76. My time is very precious.
You don't want to
waste it. And I'm not wasting it on stuff like that.
So is your book aimed at people over 70 or 75?
No. It's not like how to age or how to be well. It's something like that. It's really more philosophical.
Right.
Because there's intense cultural pressure in America and in your country of origin to do all kinds of things that will make you live longer and longer, you think. You know, you curate your diet. I caught you eating quinoa in the green room.
You didn't catch me. I was willingly eating quinoa, and I will not be.
All right.
Also, I was loving the fact that I was eating quinoa soup, and you said that you had Jack in the Box in your car.
Yeah, you can out me. It's all right with
you. Yeah, I did.
it's not my whole diet, but I mean, there's this notion that we can control our bodies and our life expectancy and everything through our diets, through preventive care, and through appropriate exercise.
I totally hear you, and I think this is absolute over-obsession with that, and especially in this country, and some, if you're rich enough to be able to afford those things. But also, what I think you're not taking into account is that I'm glad you're sitting down, Barbara, but I'm vegan. Thank you.
That's okay.
And I'm not vegan because I want to live longer. I'm vegan because it makes me feel better whilst I'm alive.
Well, that's fine.
So it's a different thing.
I'll now make a confession to you.
What?
I work out in a gym.
Uh-huh.
Right?
In a gym, really? So that surprises me. I thought you would be down on gym memberships.
No. I this is a big confession. I actually, in the more recent years, I was almost using the gym for my anthropological research of the fitness culture.
Yes.
But I do it, and I do it because I enjoy it.
See?
So you like vegan food.
Also being fit. I like being fit. It makes me feel good. It makes me do other things in my life better because of that. So it's not necessarily, but I totally understand. Can I tell you a funny story about a colonoscopy, though?
Okay.
I woke up during my colonoscopy.
I was awake the whole time.
What?
Yeah. Oh, I was groggy. I don't remember it, but.
Oh, I was totally. I mean, I loved getting put out because I think it's a sort of a practice for dying, because you sort of think, oh, they're talking to me they've done the injection now, they're just waiting, they're trying to make me count backwards, and then you think, oh my god, I might die in this. People die on the day. Oh, it's going to be fine, whatever, and then you're out.
Uh-huh.
And I quite like it, and then when you come back round and you can't remember anything. I enjoy that feeling. But in the last one, I was...
Wait, you're more pro-death than I am.
Yeah, maybe. But I think you should practice for it. But I woke up and in the middle of it, and there was like a screen on the wall with my name on it, right? So I thought, oh, I'm on TV, it happens a lot. But then I realized the picture was of the inside of my colon. It wasn't my... and they went, Mr. Cumming. Can you feel anything? And I went, I feel a big thing up my bum, yes. And then they give me more injection. And I went back out again.
So you're not against, you have a gym membership. You're not against exercising for fun or to feel good, but you seem down on yoga, for example. Make it clear, what are the quote-unquote wellness activities that you want us to
well,
discourage?
Well, I am not recommending that. This is not a successful aging book.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think we know. Just like we don't really know much about diet. In the 90s, the big thing was no fat. Remember that?
Yeah.
And so people eliminated fat and substituted carbs. Mm. And we had an obesity epidemic. Mm-hmm. So, at that point, I lost all faith because although I never eliminated butter and fried foods or anything like that, but, we don't know enough to say for sure about any of these.
And also the way our foods are being processed and we don't know the chemicals that are being used on it.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are a lot of things to worry about, but we don't actually have evidence.
Do you know
I'm really hard-nosed about evidence.
Yeah. You know what? I was doing this film and it was set in the 70s and I was looking at pictures of people from that time and I noticed how everyone was so much skinnier. And I think it was, I sort of tried to make myself look more like that time in terms of my body. And I sort of said, oh, it's because they didn't have processed food and blah, blah. But it was also because everyone smoked then too. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting how different sort of, as you're saying, like diet fads alter the whole kind of physiology.
Well, yeah, that was very impressive to women.
Mm, yeah.
The thinness culture, that was all we had to do with our bodies was make them disappear, essentially.
Right, yeah.
So when the fitness culture came along, that was kind of liberatory.
Yes.
Say you don't just have to be tiny, you can be mighty and strong. I'm delighted that my 13-year-old granddaughter is getting into it now and wants to be able to beat up boys. I just think we spend too much time on these things, time that we could be spending enjoying ourselves or doing things that are important to us, saving the world.
Saving the world. Back to your reaction to things, to screening, you call pelvic exams humiliating and degrading. And isn't being humiliated a terrible reason to avoid a screening? I mean, again, we're back to our being squeamish.
So.
You're being evidence-based.
Look, the medical profession itself is no longer recommending either annual exams for both sexes or annual pelvic exams for women because it has, been found that those don't make any difference in your life expectancy. But so all these years, women have been taking off their clothes, getting into the lithotomy position with their feet up in stirrups. So originally male doctors could probe them and play with them and everything. And I actually wrote a column recently about how there should be a Me Too moment for gynecologists. What the hell's been going on all this time if it doesn't do any good? And then they admit now it's been a ritual. I mean, some doctors make the argument, we need rituals to bond, a doctor-patient bond.
I don't know about that.
That's
hands.
Gross.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bond with anybody who says, first I have to take my clothes off.
And put your legs in stirrups.
Yeah. Oh. So if we need rituals, I think we should do something like more primal, maybe some drumming and dancing and singing. And
drink.
Yeah.
Go to Alan's show at Ben Royal Hall tomorrow.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Come to my bar.
Yes. but if you don't trust medical experts, Barbara Ehrenreich, who do you trust? When it comes to climate change, we're told to trust the experts.
No, I never have trusted experts. I have to check it myself.
Yeah.
But I want to give the listeners a simple thing they can do. When they're confronted with a procedure that the doctor suggests or a test that the doctor suggests, Google that with the word controversy.
Uh-huh.
And find out the debates among the doctors themselves about whether this is at all necessary.
Gosh, my mother-in-law would just love you. She just self-diagnoses on the internet all the time. She's just obsessed.
I'm not self-diagnosing.
No, she was, but she loves the idea of other people. She goes, other people do this. And she'll be. I wish she was could hear this.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Well, you can give her my
book. Give her a book for a present.
Actually, I originally wanted to call it "Old Enough to Die," but I think my publisher realized that nobody would ever give it to their mother for her birthday.
The book actually turned out to be called "Natural Causes." This is Barbara Ehrenreich, and we have Alan Cumming here, who is the actor and singer and writer, and he's doing a show called "Legal Immigrant" tomorrow night at Benaroya Hall.
Yes,
and we talked about sappy music and lots of stuff. Barbara, you brought up the idea. You said there's something philosophical going on here, and your book is subtitled "The Epidemic of Wellness." among other things, our illusion of control. It seems like you want to try to get us to live differently when it comes to trying to optimize our selves, our human wellness.
We need to realize something. All this dietary fussing around and all of these preventive tests, you know, have the idea behind them is that you can control your own body. If you follow these rules and work out so many minutes a day and everything, you will control your body. And that's, of course, the theme of the gym. It used to be kind of a nicer theme, but now the most recent class added at my gym is shredding your body. You know, not only control, it's like violent, aggressive control.
Shredding.
Yeah, we have boot camp at my gym.
We don't have that much control. I mean, yeah, I admire your quinoa soup thing, but it's not... You're not controlling things that way. And when we get down...
I disagree, Barbara. I'm controlling what I put in my body.
And well, I know, but that's not controlling what's going on in your body. Let me just give you my big example in this book.
I'm going to interrupt you. I think that my body is going to be a happier thing with quinoa soup than with Jack in the Box.
Well, we'll just have to see about that.
I'll come right to your
house later. All right, we'll step outside and settle this.
Arm wrestle.
The thing that I... bring up ultimately in the book is that there are things about our bodies we can't control. And this is comes from very recent scientific research, that cells within our bodies can just, quote, decide. That's not my word. Help a cancer tumor to expand or not, whether to attack another organ in your body or not, whether to clog up your arterial arteries or not.
Isn't that all the more reason for screenings? You know, my body can attack itself. You lay it out very beautifully.
I'm telling you that ultimately. I'm going to say this. It's a terrible thing to say. You're going to die.
Yes, ma'am.
Just like I am. Just like Alan is. And
sound like a hitman.
I sound like a hitman?
You're going to die.
Well, okay, I have to say it better. Yeah, I've been going around the country saying to people, you're going to die. But
before you give them Jack in the Box.
That was desperation, frankly. But,
that happens. No judgment here. Alan Cumming is not a judgmental person.
No.
But you were saying?
That there are forces, there are things going on in our body that really are, at this point, completely beyond our control. Hmm. And I focus on the cells of the immune system that, you know, the original job is to fight microbes under the body, but they'll happily turn on us. And to me, that was like such a profoundly disturbing revelation when I began to realize that not that long ago, because the research is relatively new.
Yeah, your body is not a winged unicorn of self-healing.
No, it is not harmonious. It is not holistic. It is not all of that. It is, in fact, a battleground.
Totally.
Oh. So finally, because we're just about out of time, my neighbor, one of those guys who didn't go to the doctor, dropped dead, prostate cancer. Anecdotally, we know those things happen. But what's your message given that? You know, his widow seems really upset to me. You know, she wasn't ready to. You might be old enough to die, but she wasn't ready to give him up.
No, no, I'm not telling, and no, saying that to anybody else that you're old enough to die. Yeah. It was a realization. It actually comes a lot from reading obituaries. If you're over 70, they don't call the death a tragedy, and they don't demand an investigation.
Right.
That's what I decided. That's old enough to die.
Yes.
As for people, you know, there are some people who dropped dead and didn't have did not have the screening. There are some people who have the screening and something is detected, but it would probably have never grown to a dangerous size in their lifetime. Meanwhile, in the case of prostate cancer, that you'd have surgery, you'd become impotent and incontinent.
It's only appropriate. It's appropriate that the clock on the wall is telling us our time is ending. This show is going to die right now. Barbara Ehrenreich is author of the book Natural Causes. Thank you, Barbara.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
Alan Cummings' new show premiering in Seattle at Banner Royal Hall tomorrow night, Legal Immigrant. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is really fun, too.
And thank you for tuning in. Thanks for listening to The Record on KUOW, produced by Amina Alsadi, Allison Bruzek, Ajua Jima Brempong, Jason Pagano, social media producer Bree Ripley. Tomorrow, author, journalist Chuck Klosterman. He's got a new book called 10, a highly specific, defiantly incomplete history of the early 21st century. He's a friend of the show. He's coming back tomorrow. I hope you'll tune in.